A diagnosis of heart disease can be scary, but it does not always mean that you need to rush into a health decision. Larry Mueller here, our next guest. Dr. Jignesh Shah is a board-certified cardiologist and epidemiologist in Boulder, Colorado, and he's the author of a new book. I found it very interesting. It's called, title is Heart Health, A Guide to the Tests and Treatments You Really Need. So we'll talk with him about various cardiac tests and treatments, when they are critical or reasonable, and when they should they could be unnecessary and maybe even harmful. So do you think you've had some tests or treatments for your heart that maybe weren't necessary or were? Would love to hear from you as we talk with him. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, or you could send us an email to ideas@WPR.org. Love to hear from you. Dr. Shah, with us by phone today. Thanks for taking time to be with us.
Thank you for having me on the show. It is a pleasure.
Well, I have to say I really did enjoy and found your book fascinating. Why did you think it was a necessary book to write?
That's a great question. So what I have been observing over the number of years that I've been practicing cardiology is that patients after patients are coming to me with an immense amount of anxiety. Just the anxiety of heart disease has made a cardiac cripple out of a lot of them, for whom the heart condition is not even that impairing, but the anxiety impairs them in many, many ways. They feel like they are under the cloud of heart condition, and they are feeling that they are at death's door because of the fear of it all. And when I am able to talk to them, spend time with them, explain to them what are the myths and what are the realities of their specific condition, a lot of them are in tears of relief and happiness that it is not as bad as they thought it was. And then they come back and they look like different people altogether because of the cloud that is being lifted off of them. So over time, I thought maybe I can help more people by writing about it and reach a much wider audience. And that is where I decided to write this book. As you have read in the book, it is a lot of patient stories mixed with an understanding of what our system is, which is a pay-for-service, a fee-for-service kind of a healthcare system where physicians get paid for the procedures and testing that they do. And so you can see that there is a definite incentive to do more testing and procedure. And every procedure makes the patient feel that they must have some bad disease. That is why all of this is going on. And so with my book, I'm trying to bring about what diseases need immediate care and what can take its own course without hurting you, and where you may need to get a second opinion.
Yeah, and I love how you've organized the book. As you say, you deal with sort of all of the sort of heart kinds of surgeries or whatever that that relate to the heart. Everything from catheterization to angioplasty to bypass surgery, and so forth. Giving a nice example in the beginning. Which really drew me in every single time. I started reading the story. It really it helped strike it home for me.
Very nice. Well, thank you. That was the goal, to not make it a textbook, but make it readable so that you relate to the person and you see, in a certain sense, you see a reflection of your own experience and the physician office out there. You know, you feel like this is part, this is somewhat similar to what you have gone through if you have ever been to a cardiologist, you know, and that was the goal. I purposefully did not dwell into policy matters I did not delve into healthcare economics of the country or what have you. I brought it up only as much as was relevant and nothing more. I tried to stay as much away from the nitty-gritties of science. I do bring about the research evidence, but I stayed away from the nitty-gritty so that it is more digestible. And that is what I do for my patients in the clinic on a day-to-day basis. When I explain to them in simple words, they feel like they're part of the process, and they become not just part of the team, but the part of the solution. Because, the fact of the matter is, majority of the impact that we are able to do in heart disease comes from the patients. When they exercise on a regular basis, when they quit smoking, when they eat healthy, and they keep an eye on their blood pressure and take medications as directed, that is where majority of the impact happens. The rest of the procedures, and this has been proven by research evidence, the procedures add very little to the mortality benefits that we see from heart condition. And so I want patients to take control of their own life and feel like they're in control of their situation, rather than feeling that they're getting dragged into this whirlwind of events and medical jargons and procedures which they have no control over.
Yeah. Vivian in Green Bay has a question for you. Let's go there. Vivian, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hello. I have a maintenance drug issue. My dentist, I just left there, and he is a third-generation dentist and has had some heart issues in his family, not himself, but his father and grandfather. And he has recommended that I read a book called Statin Disaster, because he thinks statins will shorten my life. But my general practitioner doctor has me on a maintenance statin, and I've been on it for about 3 years. And I'm confused about how much protection I really get from a statin.
Right. So that is an excellent question to open with, because a lot of people are on statin for maintenance or prevention or what have you. So statins have been a blessing to people with established heart attack and heart conditions. If you have been diagnosed with blockages in the heart arteries, if you have had a heart attack, using statin will add days, weeks, and years to your life. However, if you have not had a heart attack, if you have not had blockages in the heart artery, if you have not had bypass surgery or stents put in, then statins may lower your cholesterol, but it does very little to prolong your life. And this has been proven time and time again. However, all over the country, we do know that 80% of statins are used by people who have not had any of the heart conditions that I mentioned. So if you have had a heart condition, then it is helpful and it will prolong your life. We know this through research evidence. But if you've not had any such issues in the past and you're otherwise healthy, it is not going to add much in terms of longevity.
Vivian, does that help?
Oh my gosh, my eyes have just opened twice as wide. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much.
Thank you for calling in.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, this whole business about testing, we've got so many questions coming up. Lori was wondering about the calcium scoring test. Is it helpful in diagnosing cardiovascular disease? And I know you have in your book, you talk about tests, and you talk about sort of average scores and how they can hide certain things.
Yes. So in terms of the calcium score, and I will kind of combine that with stress testing also, because they are under the same realm of preemptive testing for blockages in the heart artery. That's what the calcium scores are doing, and that's what stress test will do, especially if you have not had symptoms. And though calcium score may be abnormal, we have no data to show that if you do not have symptoms, doing anything at that point in time is going to prolong your longevity. So now,
you know what? I'm going to have you hold that, Dr. Shaw. We need to take a quick break for the news, and we'll be back, and let's pick that up right after this look at the news. Thank you so much for being with us today. We're taking a look at heart health on the show today and what tests and treatments may be necessary and which ones necessarily not. Our guest today is Dr. Jignesh Shah, a board-certified cardiologist, epidemiologist, works out of Boulder, Colorado. And his new book, it's a dandy, it's called Heart Health, A Guide to the Tests and Treatments You Really Need. So what questions do you have about procedures like angioplasty or stress tests? Join in with your comments or questions at 1-800-642-1234. Or send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And Dr. Shah, just as we were breaking for news, we were kind of commenting, or you were commenting on Lori's email asking what you thought of calcium scoring tests, whether or not that test is helpful for diagnosing cardiovascular disease.
Yes. So what I was mentioning is that calcium score, similar to a stress test when done in patients who do not have symptoms. So you are going for a wellness check with your physician, a regular checkup, you're not having any chest pain or shortness of breath or what have you. And the physician says, we will go ahead and get a calcium score to look for blockages in the heart artery. And then we have looked at the research evidence for that. What we do know is that it does, whatever is found in asymptomatic patients, meaning that you do not have symptoms of chest pain, shortness of breath, or what have you, acting upon that is not likely to prolong life or improve symptoms, mostly because there are no symptoms. Physicians may add, again, statin medication or encourage you to exercise and so on and maintain a healthy lifestyle, which you can do with or without the calcium score. And so overall, the calcium score is a well-reimbursed procedure, a well-reimbursed test, which does not add longevity to life of patients. And that is where I draw a line and say, is this really helpful? And in my book and in my practice, I do not recommend it.
Yeah. You talk in that, I think your stress test chapter, was it Barbara and Susan or somebody?
Yes.
Who got the stress test? Yeah.
So in one patient where she had symptoms, that stress test was definitely helpful. Whereas in the other, that stress test was done when there were no symptoms, and it put her down the path of cascades of investigations after investigation, which then led to negative outcome. And it actually hurt her rather than helping her. And that is why the American College of Cardiology, American Heart Association, none of them recommend stress test in patients who do not have symptoms.
Oh. Let's take a call from Megan in Boston. Megan, thank you for waiting. What's on your mind?
Hi, my stepdad has a heart aneurysm, according to a doctor. And they said through Medicare he can't get the surgery because of pre-existing condition, which I don't really understand. But I'm just wondering how dangerous it is to wait, they said, 3 months until he can get it, or he was thinking maybe he could even go overseas to get it because it's cheaper there if he needs to get it at all.
Hmm. Heart aneurysm.
I heard parts of it. Would you be able to repeat that or rephrase that? I could not hear all of it.
Oh, sure. His doctor said he has a heart aneurysm, and he can't get the surgery due to Medicare saying it's a pre-existing condition. So I'm just wondering, how dangerous is it to wait the 3 months that they're saying he needs to wait until he can get the surgery through Medicare? Or can he go overseas maybe? Or is it something diet and exercise can solve?
Okay. So the heart aneurysm, not very clear on the diagnosis. However, I will try to address by mentioning a couple of things. Some of the blood vessels of the major blood vessel, aorta, can have aneurysm, which is basically a portion of the blood vessel which is weak and dilated. And in those circumstances, there are certain cutoffs at which it may be critical to get the surgery done. However, in this case, as it is in case of many other procedures of the heart, you really have to look at the upside versus the downside of it. So, for example, if you were told that there is a 5% chance of death due to the aneurysm on an annual basis, then would it be worth getting the surgery done? You would say, yeah, absolutely, I want to avoid that. But on the other hand, you also have to ask the physician, what is the downside? And if they said, well, in your particular situation, there is a 10% risk of death because of the surgery, then you would pause and take a second look at whether it is worth taking a risk on the disease itself. And that is how I would recommend you approach it. So I would say talk to a surgeon and get very specific numbers in terms of how risky is the procedure. And the beautiful thing about this is cardiothoracic surgery is has so much research behind it that they can plug in his details and actually tell you what his risk would be of dying after the procedure, what his risk would be of being on the ventilator for more than 7 days, what his risk of kidney failure would be, and so on. And once you understand that, you'll be able to make a good judgment whether or not it is worth going through surgery or just taking the medications.
Very good points. Megan, thank you so much. Good luck. You know, that's one of the things I really like about your book. At the end of each chapter, when you're discussing angioplasty, for example, you talk, when is one typically needed? What are the risks? And then what questions should I ask my cardiology before signing up?
Yes, I think that it is very important to ask very specific questions and become part of the healthcare team where we ask questions so that we know how we are benefiting from that procedure versus what risk we are taking, so that there are no regrets after the procedure and thoughts that, oh, I only wish I knew then what I know now, you know. So it is very important to have an explicit conversation with the physician. And I would go further and say, if a physician is not willing to answer your questions, I would say get a second opinion. Get another physician who will be more patient with you and will answer all those questions.
Just don't go move ahead. That came through for me in spades when you talked about that if your doctor is in a hurry and isn't ready to listen to you, then you should find somebody else who is ready to listen.
Absolutely. And this is how I hope and wish that we are going to change the culture of healthcare, where we are not driven by the fear and the doctor kind of having this paternalistic attitude. I'll tell you what to do and you do it. But we will change the culture in healthcare where we will all be part of the team and make good choices together, which works for the individual patient in front of us, not because it is just the protocol that we follow.
Christina in Glenwood has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Christina.
Hi there. Thank you. I'm wondering, what does the research show regarding taking statins following a stroke?
So in terms of following the stroke, we do know that patients do benefit from aspirin and some other blood thinners, which are called antiplatelet medications. So we do know that that helps prevent another stroke. We also know that statins do help in this situation because, once again, it is the same situation of blockages in the arteries. So statin would help in that particular situation. And then the next thing I would bring about is the connection between a heart condition called atrial fibrillation, which we continue to see more and more often, and stroke. Patients who have a heart condition of atrial fibrillation do have an increased risk of stroke. And if they do have a stroke, then taking more powerful blood thinners, such as warfarin or one of the newer medications that are on the market, will decrease the risk of stroke. And we do know over the past 30 years of research that the benefit of this medicine is tremendous compared to the risk, which is small. And so that would be the recommendation for patients with stroke, to look into, to use aspirin, other antiplatelet medication, statins, and then look into whether the patient has atrial fibrillation or not. And if they do, then use more powerful medications such as warfarin or some of the other newer medications.
Thank you, Christina. Appreciate it. John in Toma will give you a chance. Hi, John.
Hi, good morning. How are you doing?
Good.
Yeah, I'm a cardiac patient myself. Back in 2001, I had a heart attack and underwent emergency triple bypass surgery. And, you know, I've been going through heart things ever since. After that, I had bad atrial fibrillation. They were treating that with medication for a long time. They did a couple of angioplasties to try to cauterize what causes that electrical thing or something, from what I understand, in the heart. And it lasted for a while. Eventually, I ended up getting a pacemaker defibrillator put in. That was after I was diagnosed with heart failure. Which I am now, and actually, though, I'm doing very well. I follow the doctor's orders. I take my medications, and, you know, and I've been doing this for, what, almost 19 years now, and that's my biggest thing to recommend to everyone is follow the doctor's orders the best you can. I'm no angel, but, you know, try to do it the best you can, and you'll be all right. You know, I feel good, and I think I might live till maybe 85 or 90.
There you go, John.
All right.
Comment, Dr. Shah?
Yes, I think that his point is well taken, that if you do have blockages in the heart artery and you need a bypass surgery, then absolutely, by all means, get the bypass surgery. But remember that that is not a complete fix. You still need to continue to do all the right things, such as take medications on a regular basis, keep your blood pressure under control. And at that point in time, statins would be helpful. So you need to take statins and continue to exercise. Do not smoke and eat healthy. So all those recommendations continue to be in place after the bypass surgery. So just because you've gone through bypass surgery does not mean that now you are quote-unquote fixed and you don't have to follow those recommendations. So I agree with him that continue to follow the recommendations even after the bypass surgery.
In some circumstances, I know you were in one of your chapters, you talked, was it Richard, a tennis player, I think it was?
Yes.
a routine exam and he winds up with bypass surgery. And
right. So he was recommended bypass surgery when his blockages were just not significant enough to require a bypass surgery. And then he went for a second opinion. He was told at the university hospital that he does not need bypass surgery because his blockages were not bad enough for that. And this is something that I wanted to give an example of how patients can take a step back and not panic. If you walked into the doctor's office and you had some testing done, and as a result of that testing, the doctor said you need a bypass surgery, what I want the audience to remember is that these blockages that are being noticed right now have been with you for the last few months, if not few years, and there is no rush to it. You can get a second opinion. We don't need to do this overnight or immediately, and that was one of the key lessons out there. This is very different from a situation where you went into a hospital in the emergency room with a crushing chest pain, and the ECG showed that you are having a heart attack at that point in time. Then there is no time for a second opinion. At that point in time, I would get all the testing and the treatment done immediately. However, if you have generally been feeling well, and this was something documented on stress test or testing done as an outpatient, then you have time to get a second opinion. And the opinion you may notice may be very different at times.
Nancy in Green Bay will give you a chance. Hi, Nancy.
Yes. I have canker sores. I'm a cardiac patient, and I had angioplasty, and I'm on statin and blood thinners. Mm-hmm. And I was recommended a vitamin called calcium lactate, and it does help my canker sores. Is that going to affect my heart?
The best we know, it does not impact your heart positively or negatively. However, it would be important to let your cardiologist know what medications you are taking so that before they start you on any new medicine, they can check for drug interaction. However, this will not impact your heart directly, positively or negatively.
There you go, Nancy. Thanks. Justin in Appleton, your turn. Hi, Justin.
Hi there. I just wanted to reference a good documentary called The Widowmaker, and it talks all about the calcium score, coronary artery scan, and how it can really, really do a much better job than any of these biomarkers that they test for cholesterol. And it's a good, very good documentary.
All right. Thank you for calling. Are you familiar with that documentary, Dr. Shah?
I'm not. However, I will make it a point to see it in the next week or so, because it is of interest to me about some of the terminologies we use in cardiology, you know, such as widowmaker or you're a ticking time bomb and things of that nature. And sometimes we get our patients so worried by using these terminologies, but I would definitely look at the documentary and see if it is based on the research and the evidence.
Diane emailed to say her husband has hyperoptic cardiomyopathy. She just wondered about just general advice. He gets regular EKGs.
Yes. So in patients with hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, it is important to get the regular EKG. It is also important to get family members tested. And there are medicines that can be used for hypertrophic cardiomyopathy to keep the heart pressures under control, the blood pressure under control, and then any symptoms such as shortness of breath or passing out are very critical, and you need to contact your doctor immediately for those kinds of symptoms. This is a genetic disorder that can be passed to family members, so they too need to be tested for it.
As I look through your book, you cover pretty much the basic kinds of issues that and procedures that are used on a person's heart or not used. Sometimes they're used and they shouldn't be. As we're getting closer to winding up, talk a bit about your own general advice. I know something at the end, you had a little piece on heart to heart.
Yes. My general advice to patients would be to recognize that how your heart health does depends on what 90% of that, 95% of that depends on what you do at home, your home care, much more than what happens in the hospital, the health care. And what I mean by home care is to, number one, quit smoking. Number two, eat healthy. And number three, exercise on a regular basis. Once you have done these three basic steps, then the next thing would be to keep a close eye on your blood pressure and make sure your blood pressure is under control. And if you're a diabetic, your blood sugar, and make sure your blood sugar is under control. If you do those steps before you have a heart condition, you would have taken care of 90% of the problems in terms of the heart condition or heart health. And then if you get diagnosed with heart disease, in that case, taking your medications on a regular basis does majority of the work. The procedures may add to your longevity, but not as much as still continuing to do these basic steps and continuing to take your medications on a regular basis. And I strongly urge you to participate in your healthcare, read about heart condition, improve your healthcare literacy so that you can be an active member of your healthcare team and not get overwhelmed and anxious into doing more testing and more procedures, which may or may not be helpful.
Dr. Shah, thank you so much. His book is called Heart Health, A Guide to the Tests and Treatments You Really Need. A lot of really good stories in here and a lot of good questions that he raises for you to ask your own physician. Great to have him with us, and thank you for listening. And please stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network.